You're listening to the BBC World Service, and I'm Shaima Khalil. Let me hear the loud shouts. They sing. I have never feared death. Welcome to the start of the day for these police recruits and to Egypt's Challenge, a series exploring the problems facing my country 2 years after the January 2011 revolution. In this program, we'll be taking on the men in uniform, the police and the military, who have always played such a crucial role in Egypt. The question is, what are they doing now, and what are their plans for the future? It's early morning assembly at the police academy on the outskirts of Cairo. I can see hundreds of new recruits lined up neatly, ready to start an intense day of training. They're standing there with their khaki uniform and different color epaulets to show the different years. The reputation of the police force in Egypt is not good, to say the least. In fact, the 2011 revolution started on National Police Day, a clear sign of what many Egyptians here think of these men in uniform. The police used to rule the streets in Egypt with a firm and often frightening hand. But now that they have virtually withdrawn from public view and the streets are becoming increasingly lawless, people are asking, where are they? A few thousand of them can be found behind the high walls of this enormous compound, the largest police academy in the world, they proudly tell me. Most recruits spend 4 years here after leaving school being trained as Egypt's future police officers. Well, we're only 5 minutes into this assembly and I'm already just exhausted looking at the cadets training. They did running laps and now they're doing stretches, and just a few minutes before they were jumping. And I could just see them preparing ropes and harnesses. I'm here with Colonel Sharif Soher. He's head trainer here at the police academy. And Colonel, this is a very military style kind of training. What kind of policeman are you trying to turn your students into?
First of all, an officer that respects human rights, a combatant, fearless, highly trained and fit, but who also understands the people he has to deal with. You see, we have the height section and the hurdle section because in the 4 years here, we want to break that hurdle of fear. We also try to simulate what is going on outside here. Crime on the outside is different now. Before, it was just combat training, but now we've included cultural knowledge and especially a greater focus on human rights.
Given the police's reputation for human rights violations, that's an interesting new emphasis. No doubt it's said partly for our benefit, but it's also a tacit recognition of the need to restore the credibility of an organization with a badly tarnished image. Immediately after President Hosni Mubarak stepped down, the military took over. But during their 16 months in charge, they were accused of incompetence and brutality, and that severely damaged their reputation too. But with the police off the streets, many Egyptians want the army to return, to restore order.
Oh, look at that. Oh, look, my husband would have had a field day with this. He would have stayed all day here. He loves airplanes.
Growing up in Egypt, you're taught from a very early age that the armed forces are the defenders of the nation. I'm surrounded by old MiG fighter jets, tanks, various rockets and guns, because this is the entrance of the 1973 October War Museum. In school, we were taught that this war was the country's biggest victory over Israel. Now, of course, this victory is debated around the world, but not here in Egypt. And it's this war that is one of the main reasons why Egyptians hold the armed forces in such high regard. More recently, the military have been seen as the saviors of the 2011 revolution when they sided with the demonstrators and ousted President Hosni Mubarak. Inside the museum, you can enjoy a series of audiovisual shows, culminating with a huge revolving stage. Designed by North Korean architects, by the way. And as you sit there, you listen to rousing military music
and look at painted scenes from the 1973 war against Israel. It certainly went down well with the schoolboys on our tour.
Well, one of the big questions here is what the military is going to do next. In the year and a half after the revolution, the military council took control of Egypt, but many argue that their involvement in day-to-day politics not only damaged their image and their reputation, but was largely unsuccessful. But now, just a few months after Egypt's first democratic presidential elections, could the army be preparing to come back? Well, the papers here are full of it. Here's an English newspaper with a headline referring to the Port Said strikes and violence, saying Port Said residents want army to manage the state. And another one showing a picture of a banner saying Al-Shab Yurid Al-Gaysh Min Gadid, the people want the military again. And another opposition newspaper with a big red headline saying Al-Shab Yutalib Inqilab Askari Fawran, people are asking for a military coup right now.
The President Morsi doesn't want to bring the military again to the power.
Mohamed Soudan is a senior figure in President Morsi's ruling Freedom and Justice Party, the political wing of the Muslim Brotherhood. Shortly after becoming president, Mohamed Morsi surprised many by dismissing the defense minister and the chief of staff. He also rescinded a military order that curbed presidential powers.
We changed the structure of the military because they were in the power for 60 years. And now he put them out of this kind of structure. If he bring them back, then the image of the military people, the military uniform in the Egyptian streets, that will bring the revolution time again to the image of the Egyptian people.
Can I just tell you one more thing about a message from the people that I've spoken to? And this is from more than one person. They are basically asking for the military to come back in power. They said, nothing is changing. The country's out of control. Bring back the military. What do you say to that?
I tell them you forgot what happened during the military in the power. Just after the revolution, then the military was there everywhere in the street. And we have everyday thugs killing the people. We have thugs stealing cars every day. Every day there were a very big problem, but they forgot that. Just they forgot. I just remind them. I want to refresh their memory.
Is the Muslim Brotherhood worried about the army coming into politics again?
We will not need them again in the politics, and we don't think that we'll come back. We finished this period. 60 years is enough. Enough is enough. They will not come back to the politics.
Getting to speak to anyone serving in the armed forces is extremely difficult. We went through all the official channels but got nowhere. General Samih Saif al-Yazal, however, is the nearest thing you'll get to the official military point of view. He may have retired 9 years ago, but he still has close ties to the army. He's clearly no fan of President Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood.
The Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic movement in this country are trying to damage the reputation of the army because they're really afraid that now the people in the street are respecting the army much more than before, and they feel this is a serious threat to them.
So are you saying there is a clash between President Morsi's government, the Muslim Brotherhood government, and the army?
Did I say clash? I didn't say clash, but I...
Well, you said they're trying to damage the reputation. That's not working together harmoniously.
No, definitely, yes. That's the word. They are not working together harmoniously. At the plus, the relation should be better than that. But I don't think we came to the point of clash yet. But I would say there is a kind of jealousy. Jealousy between the presidency and the army, because they feel now that the reputation of the army is really high, getting back to normal, maybe better than normal, which they feel that's not really in their favor. I'm trying to be honest with you. They feel that the army is a threat to them, and this is completely wrong.
So how would you describe the relationship between the Muslim Brotherhood, who are now in charge of Egypt, and the army?
Tense.
Does that worry you?
My country is really worrying me very much, but I don't really worry about if they are upset from the army or not. I don't care about that, but I do care about my country. When you go in the street and see people actually are kidnapped for ransom, and you don't know if you send your kid to the school in the morning, he's going to come back to you, or he's going to be kidnapped, and somebody will give you a phone call and tell you, I need £500,000 to release your kid. We haven't seen that before, but it is in the streets of Egypt now. This is what's going on. That's what worries me.
How involved is the military now in Egypt's politics?
Nothing, zero. They are not involved whatsoever, directly or indirectly, in the political life of the country.
But from being in control and in charge for decades to zero power and control, that's quite a shift.
It's quite a shift, and that's what they want. And I'm, as I mentioned, I see them a lot. I see the leaders, I see the commanders, I see the units. I go there every week, and they have no intention whatsoever. I'm repeating that, for them to come back to the political life of this country.
They might not have any intention, as you say, but will they step in if the political standoff in the country continues? Because, again, a few months ago in December, when there was a conflict with the referendum, with the constitution, there was a political standoff between President Morsi's government, Muslim Brotherhood-led government, and the opposition, and there were calls on the street for the army to be involved. Will they be willing to step in?
They will not step in voluntarily unless they have been asked by the majority of the Egyptians, not by the government, that please come and save the country because it's a dead end.
So how do we define the majority of Egyptians?
Well, you can see that in the streets, in every single governorate, that the media is asking, everybody is asking, the opposition parties, many other parties as well, they said, please come and save the country because it's going to be a chaos. This is going to be the end of this country. Save the country. In this case, if this is the last card to be played with, then they will use it.
But not everyone in the military is waiting on that possibility. Others are setting up their own political parties. Ex-General Mohammed Abdel Azim claims that the newly formed Egyptian Republican Party, established by himself and other former military and police officers, already has thousands of members. General Abdel Azim, you said that these military values of discipline, of control, of commitment, you would like to apply that to civilian life. The problem is that civilian life doesn't run like this. Civilian life is quite messy. There are negotiations that need to be made, compromises that need to be made. And so it doesn't really lend itself to a person from a military background. It becomes very difficult for military people like yourselves to be involved in civilian political life.
Military values are different, if not opposite, to political values. Because politics has a lot to do with maneuvering, with manipulation, with deviousness sometimes. But let me tell you, we use those things, deviousness and manipulation, in war as well. Look at what we did in 1973. It was through planning, through manipulation, that we were able to succeed. So we are going to use this in our political lives too.
But what do you say to Egyptians who say this? It's been 60 years of military rule in Egypt. Enough. Khalas. We want a civilian rule now. We're a democracy, and we want civilians to be in charge.
Well, all our lives, Egypt has gone through war, and so the military had to have a say in political decisions. Maybe there is no war now, but we still need a strong army to maintain a balance of power in the region to ensure peace. And over the past 30 years, despite the corruption that Egypt suffered during the Mubarak era, the army was immune from this. The corruption caused economic problems, and when there were food shortages like flour or sugar, Hosni Mubarak would come to the army and say, please support the state.
Saying anything about the Egyptian armed forces is a very sensitive subject here. You could easily be accused of spying or denigrating the name of the nation. I myself feel quite uncomfortable recording here. This is very much military territory. I mean, the buildings all around me are owned and run by the armed forces. Just around the corner is the 1973 War Museum, and there is a military officers club, a hotel, and even a bakery just at the end of the street. And opposite me, I'm looking at a bowling alley also run by the military forces. Here's a bag of frozen vegetables, and there's a whole range here that you can buy. You can also buy meat, chicken, water, olive oil. And all of this is available in a shopping complex owned and run by the Egyptian Armed Forces. And most of the products here are produced and sold by the military.
We do know that Egypt is one of the biggest recipients of U.S. military aid. But what we don't know is how big the military's involvement is in the country's civilian economy, nor who the decision makers are. It's a subject shrouded in secrecy. Rida Issa, a financial expert, has made it his business to look at the figures. He says that in Egypt's national budget, which runs to hundreds of pages, just five lines are devoted to military expenditure.
Look, the army has the military side of his projects. We all know it and we accept it. But what changed during Gamal Mubarak era, the last 10, 15 years, we found the army working in housing, in construction, in food, in oil, in tourism, in a lot of things. Actually, in Egypt, we are all proud about our army. But when we go to the budget and find that we have deficit in budget, we have to look around. We see army budget is not declared. We have no disclosure, no financials. Everything has been closed because of it is related to the army. Okay, national security reasons are acceptable and understood. But we got to differentiate very well between the military side of business and the civilian side, because the consumers has right to know about who is dealing in the market, who is owning, who are the partners, what are the agreement, what are the product, what are the financials. Let us know how, why is the army lending money to the government, where from. This happened as the Thawra.
During the revolution?
Exactly.
What you're saying is that the army was lending money to the government during the revolution?
Yes, the army gave Egyptian money loans. This was declared, yes. Where from? We are taxpayer. This is taxpayer money at the end.
What percentage of the Egyptian economy does the army control?
Due to the lack of information, I read people talking up to 40%, but generally they talk about 14%, up to 20% of the Egyptian economy is held by the army.
How much of that is taxed?
According to law, army establishments are tax exempted, and they also can get projects out of the public tender law. So they have two advantages at least, tax-free and competition-free. And furthermore, we got to ask about the labor cost.
But one argument is that, well, the army has its project, but it's self-sufficient. It doesn't pay taxes, but it basically spends the money on itself. It spends the money on weaponry, it spends the money on its personnel, it spends the money on housing, basically using the money on the Egyptian army.
Do you have documents for these expenses? You have sources? We don't have. Okay. Trying to build a state within the state is very dangerous. When the army goes to say, I cannot rely on the Egyptian civilian economy and I got to prepare my stuff myself, what about the 90 million Egyptian people who are lying under this economy? We are also taxpayers. We are the owners of the army. We are the owners of Egypt. We got to know what's wrong. We cannot accept that each side can go and build the state within the state for whatever reason.
But for General Sameh Saif al-Yazal, those figures about the military's share of the economy are grossly exaggerated.
I have heard like 40% of the Egyptian economy is controlled by the army. I'm telling you, under my responsibility, and you can sue me if I'm wrong, it's 8%, not more than that.
Now, the basic role of the army and the armed forces is to protect the country's borders. How confident are you that the army is in control of those borders now?
I am confident if they left alone to do their job. But if you tell them do this and do not do that, touch this and do not touch that, then they cannot control it.
Okay, can you be more specific?
Tunnels, for instance, and Gaza.
You're referring to smuggling?
Smuggling and using them for illegal action, like sending people through the tunnels to killing people and killing officers in Sinai and get back again through the tunnel to the other side. And you just watch that without giving an order to the army to close it down and to be serious in that. And in fact, you're asking them to be loose and not to do your job properly.
Are you saying that the army was prevented from doing their job properly?
I don't have information, but could be one of the scenarios.
That they were told, don't touch the tunnels?
I cannot swear on that, but I can smell it.
What I'm getting from you is that the army are ready to control these borders. They want to control these borders. They want to take charge. And they are being told outright, do not do your job. Do not control those borders.
No comment.
Can you
shed light on this at all?
No comment.
Does this worry you?
Yes.
Because if I'm an Egyptian, well, if I am an Egyptian and I'm listening to this and I'm worried.
I'm worried too.
How do you see this ending?
No comment.
While the army has to worry about the country's borders, it's the police that are supposed to keep the streets secure. We've heard how Egypt's police force is trying to reform. But 2 years after the revolution, Egyptians are still complaining about brutality. Listen to what happened to Ayman, arrested in February of this year.
"40 to 50 of us were crammed into a small room. We couldn't even stand. They covered our heads with black plastic bags and they beat us and insulted us. And we were tortured with electricity. They poured water on the floor and connected it to the electric currents. So we were jumping up and down. I don't want to go into details, but I was also sexually assaulted with a stick. They tied ropes around our necks and made us pretend to be dogs and called us women's names. And they would say, 'Is the revolution useful to you now? We can't take our holidays, we can't live our lives, this is your fault.'"
Dr. Ahmed Ghad Mansour is the new head of the police academy.
"After the January 25th revolution, the police was in a state of complete collapse. Everybody knows this. And there was a collapse of morale. We are being asked to reinstate security. We have to rebuild the personnel and the morale. We also have to physically rebuild. This is extremely difficult. Police stations were attacked. Some prisons were also attacked. We need to provide weaponry and cars across the whole of this vast country. And we have to do all this in an unstable and very poor economic and political environment. When will this happen? No one can answer that. It will happen gradually. That is what I'm trying to tell people."
There are still 2 years after the revolution, and this is what many Egyptians came out in the streets to call against: brutality by the police, torture by the police. Why is it still happening, do you think?
"The truth is, it's the media. Some media exaggerate some incidents. I admit there are mistakes, but if you keep showing a mistake 24 hours a day for weeks on end, and you make programs and interviews about it, then that's how you give the impression that it's a huge mistake, and it's systematic. In fact, 99% of human rights violations are done by civilians, criminals, against other civilians, not the police against civilians. The vast majority of policemen work extremely hard."
The recruits are now going through an obstacle course. They have to crawl under barbed wire, jump through fire obstacles, and all the time they're shouted at by their trainers. They're saying, shout louder, you're being fired at. Basically just giving them the sense of urgency and danger of a real life situation. And I know this is just training, but there's still that real sense of urgency around me.
Few journalists get access to this vast academy, which stretches for kilometers each way. To call it a complex wouldn't do it justice. It's like a town in itself. Freshly showered and spruced up from his physical endeavors on the assault course, we were able to meet one of the young cadets, Khalid Hassan Abu Al-Ila. He's now in his fourth and final year and about to start his police job for real.
When you see these YouTube videos of policemen beating up protesters, or these YouTube videos of torture, I'm sure you see them, what reaction do you get?
Well, like I said, it depends on the situation. Like, everyone can download, upload a video on the YouTube. Everyone can say anything on the Facebook. Everyone can say anything on Twitter. It's not the truth. You were not there. You were not in the situation. You were not there, so you can't judge anyone. That's how I see it.
It's a very difficult situation, security situation in Egypt at the moment, and you're about to graduate very soon. How are you feeling? Are you looking forward to it?
Well,
you smile.
Yeah, actually, I'm looking forward to it just because I think this job is what I've always wanted. And this is like a dream coming true to me. It's been like 10 years. I've wanted to be a cop for 10 years, and now I'm going to do it. So I don't care if it's just so messed up out there. I just have to deal with the situation like everyone else, because we're like, you know, We're like the heroes of this country. I can say that, proudly say that, yeah. We're like the heroes of this country. We protect people. We catch the bad guys. It's what we do.
We've seen them running, jumping, climbing, going to the gym, lifting weights, swimming, shooting, and now we're here for the horse riding. It's been quite an Olympic show that police had put on for us. And to round off our extraordinary day here, we're taken to a substantial marbled building. And what do we find inside? An opera auditorium modeled, I'm told, on Vienna's State Opera House. And to welcome us, the Academy Band. My mother, I would sacrifice my soul for you. My home, I would give my life to you. A brigadier general sings proudly about Egypt. And as the band plays on, it's time to leave the confines of this enormous compound and turn my gaze further south, away from the big cities of Cairo and Alexandria. In the next program of Egypt's Challenge with me, Shaima Khalil, I shall be traveling with my producer, John Murphy, and a young Egyptian revolutionary to Upper Egypt, to see what impact the extraordinary events of 2 years ago have had far away in the countryside.